better off. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 59 of A Pod of Their Own, as I just frantically looked up, because apparently time is a flat circle. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my co-host, Linda Serovich. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And we are also joined this week by Jen Ramos. You guys may remember them from the last time they were on the pod. Say hi to the listeners, Jen.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having me on.
In case you don't remember, we had Jen on the pod once before. They are research and development and prospects at Baseball Prospectus. You should be reading their work if you aren't, and all of the lovely work that is going on at Baseball Prospectus. I've contributed there a few times myself. It is a great website. This week we will be talking about primarily two things. Mostly there's not much Mets stuff to talk about, but the reason why there isn't Mets stuff to talk about is in and of itself a topic of discussion. So we will be talking about the Mets having two cases of coronavirus that caused their schedule to be suspended for several days. And now they have kind of the worst schedule ever coming up as a result of trying to make up all those games. They obviously didn't release the names of the folks that tested positive out of, you know, interest of HIPAA rules. If the player doesn't want to be identified, he doesn't have to be identified. So the Mets decided that they didn't want their player, or the player himself decided he did not want to be identified. But we know that it is likely one of Tomas Nito or Andrés Giménez, and I think a beat reporter, who I won't name because I don't want to shame people on the pod, but I think a beat reporter accidentally leaked it. So I think we're pretty sure.
I don't know if that was their fault, or if it was how Rojas phrased it.
Yeah, because they kind of, like, you can't, it's hard because you have HIPAA rules, obviously, which should not be violated, but then you have to put them on the COVID injured list, and then, like, or the injured list in general, and they just put people on the injured list for, quote, undisclosed reasons, and then that causes speculation. If we already know the Mets have positive tests, then we kind of, by process of elimination, can figure it out. So the Mets placed both Andrés Giménez and Tomas Nito on the injured list for undisclosed reasons. We did know that it was one player and one coach who had tested positive, so it couldn't have been both Andrés Giménez and Tomas Nito who had tested positive. So it's one or the other, and the other one either has some sort of injury that is not COVID or related, or by contact tracing, they determined that that player was in close contact with the player who tested positive.
And Gary DeSarcina and Hensley Mullins aren't with the team.
Yes. Those two coaches currently are with the team. So it's one of them, but we don't know. But it's not really all that relevant who it is. All that is relevant is that the Mets did have two cases of COVID on their team. But the positive thing is that unlike the previous two major outbreaks, it didn't spread as fast to the rest of the team. As far as we know yet, they had a bunch of negative tests subsequently, which is why they have resumed play tonight as we record this on Tuesday evening. So that's good, but
I think they're the only team that had multiple people test positive and not have an outbreak so far.
Yes.
Because the Reds only had one person test positive, but anybody else who's had multiples have led to an outbreak. So I guess maybe the takeaway is the protocols worked.
I was skeptical of MLB's protocols, but it seems to the extent that teams are following them, they're actually working. And I mean, I don't know how much of this is like New York media bias or whatever else, but the media did make a point after these tests came out to sort of, there were more than one pieces all of a sudden showing up in the New York beat being like, oh, the Mets are one of the like best teams at adhering to the protocols of all the teams. So the fact that they've had a positive is, you know, troubling for the viability of the sport. I think that was the exact phrasing of what Bradford wrote in the New York Daily News. It was troubling for the viability of the sport that the Mets, who seemed to be following protocols, had these tests. But it does seem that the fact that they are following protocols by all accounts is paying off for them, which is good, I guess. But yeah, now they have to scrape together a rotation for the next 9 games in 6 days that they have. And we're already seeing how well that's going.
Yeah. Can we also, before we move on, call for a public apology to Strowman and Cespedes?
Yes, please.
Because they specifically, Strowman specifically mentioned Miami, and look at what happened.
Yep. And yeah, so Strowman and Cespedes opted out of the season. All the assholes in our mentions were all about how they weren't actually doing it for COVID reasons, and they were being selfish, and they walked out on the team, blah, blah, blah. Welp, looks like they were right, and you guys were wrong, so... we shouldn't be giving players crap for opting out ever, because they are actually putting their health and their bodies on the line, and they don't have to be doing this for your entertainment, as we've been saying on the pod past few weeks now.
I don't know how you can still have teams playing in Florida. I know, like, the timing's weird, so, like, you don't know where they picked it up. It could have been Philadelphia or Florida, but it just, it's not good. That the Marlins got sick first. Now the Mets were in Miami and got sick. It's just like they should have had a backup plan, and it's very evident that they didn't.
Yeah, I mean, like the Canada was smart enough to not let the Blue Jays play there, and they had to come up with a contingency plan. So, I mean, it's looking more and more like what's funny is. I think, like, way back when, the MLB was talking about a bubble, but they were talking about a bubble in Arizona and Florida, which is exactly the wrong idea. I mean, the bubbles seem to work in other sports, but, of course, MLB considered it, A, didn't do it, and this is the result, and B, even when they were considering it, they were going to put it in the spots where COVID cases were on the rise at the time. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
I think also with, like, the fact that they were thinking Arizona and Florida, like, obviously because of the spring training sites, and then you got the backfields there, so there's, like, a ton of fields, but, like, if they don't have a really strict bubble protocol the way that, like, the NHL and the NBA have, like, there would have been more outbreaks going on there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, we've already seen players, you know, break MLB protocol with going out and whatnot, and being punished for it. But like, you can't. I mean, it's not enough to just punish them after the fact. You kind of have to prevent it from happening in the first place.
And I don't know, because it might be okay, because the NBA is bubbling at Disney World or Disneyland, whatever the ones in Florida, and they've had no test. They've had nobody test positive since they bubbled, so. I guess it is doable in Florida, but again, you need to make sure everybody's all in and make sure everybody buys in. And again, as we've seen, that is clearly not the case in baseball.
Yeah. I wonder, like, I mean, obviously, I don't know nearly as much about the NFL as I know about baseball, but... like, I wonder how they're going to handle this, because, like, it's going to be a lot harder for them, because A, it's a contact sport, B, like, they have giant rosters, so keeping track of that many more players is going to be, like, a challenge, I can imagine. So I don't know how that's going to go down, but I wish them the best of luck, I guess.
Especially since they're apparently opening up, like, the Miami Dolphins are opening up their stadium to fans.
What?
That's going to be a disaster. Yeah.
The Miami of course the Dolphins are doing that.
In Florida.
Yeah. So that I'm sure that will go well. Very well. Oh, yeah, gosh. Sure.
Oh,
my brother's a big Miami Dolphins fan, so I'm going to send him a text roasting him later for that.
I think the Chiefs were, too.
Oh, boy. Solid plan, guys. Solid plan.
And I know the baseball was considering bubbling for the playoffs, but I feel like that's something they should probably set in stone now.
Yeah. And not fly by the seat of their pants like they have been doing. Because that's the thing, even if the protocols are working now, which it seems like they are for the most part, like, it took them a while to get here. They weren't here before, like, all this stuff that the Mets had to do, like, they were talking about how, like, the Mets had to socially distance on the flight, and they had to wear masks during the entire flight and not take them off. It's like, why were these things not in place in the first place? Why were masks in the dugout not in place in the first place? That was only later that they did that. Like, all these things, they seem to be just, like, making up as they go. Like, oh crap, like, we have some coronavirus, so let's, like, put in more stricter measures. It's like, well, you should have had a lot of these to begin with, if not all of them.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so disheartening. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
It's okay, no, it's okay. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, that's what's so disheartening about it, is that it seems like they're making it up. Like, they're like, oh, there was something about how, oh, the Reds weren't allowed to travel, but the Mets were, but the Mets had more people test positive, so why are they traveling when the Reds couldn't? It's like, why is there no standard for, like, I get it's a virus, it's unpredictable, it's hard to plan, but there should at least be something you can hold on to and, like, say, okay, if this happens, then we can do this. If this happens, then we go this route. And it just seems like they're making it up.
Yeah, what I was going to say is the 2020 MLB season is like, Whose Line Is That Anyway, where everything's made up and the points don't matter.
Yeah, it basically is. It basically is.
Oh, and it, like, still is. That's such a good analogy.
And the thing that I keep thinking about is how they didn't even have, like, an idea for how the playoffs would work until, like, the first week of the season. And they announced it after opening day. So, like, they really do not even have a plan for the postseason, considering they didn't have a plan until opening day. Sometimes I feel like they're not even going to announce how the playoffs are going to work, if, like, it's going to be in a bubble or not, until, like, the last week of the season.
That's probably very true.
Yeah, it's.
And then they'll have to scramble to find a site. Like, a state will say, no, we don't want you here, like Toronto did, and then they're going to be up in the air again.
Yeah, because honestly, I mean, like, you're going to have to weigh, like, the states are going to have to weigh, like, what is the potential, like, obviously they should be putting the health of their citizens first, but being the cynic that I am about how politicians operate oftentimes, like, they're going to weigh that against the potential revenue of having playoffs in their state, although since there's no fans, I don't know how much extra revenue any said state will get. Just, they will get extra revenue from the teams, like, you know, the teams staying there and stuff like that, but.
And that's a lot, like, the rosters are big, and if, I don't know, I guess you would have two bubble sites, one for the East and one for the West, but I guess you would also need the taxi squad coming with you, so what is that, about 30 people per team? So that's a lot of people coming into your state.
Yeah, plus, I mean, obviously, plus staff.
Yeah, coaches, staff, yeah.
Yeah, so like, if you're doing the whole 60-man roster, plus coaches, plus managers, plus athletic staff, that's, like, maybe 100 people per team at worst, like, at best, maybe. And, like, I'm also thinking about it because, like, I watch the Giants a lot, obviously, because I grew up a Giants fan. They have a 13-man coaching staff alone, not counting managers. So I'm like, that's already, like, 73 people. So that's going to be a disaster. And, you know, other teams have big coaching staffs too, not as big as the Giants, but, like, you're looking at 75 to 100 people at best.
Yeah,
that's
a lot.
Yeah, for 8 teams, so that's like 800 people going into one city alone.
Yep, and obviously they increase the number of teams that are making the playoffs, so that makes it even more than it ordinarily would be. So yeah, it's gonna be something else.
If they wanna, you know, do this, they should probably do it now.
Yeah, they should probably solidify that plan now, but they're not. And the Mets have, you know, essentially no rotation at all. They have Jacob deGrom, and that's it. And they,
oh, that's
and
fun.
we're already seeing the fruits of that bear itself out in game one of this first doubleheader that the Mets are playing.
Your man's is starting.
I know, finally, Seth Lugo gonna start a game. What does the man have to do to start a game? Apparently, his team has to get coronavirus and a bunch of his games have to get canceled, and then he can finally start. But it's under less than ideal circumstances. I'm upset because like I've waited so long for like Seth Lugo to finally get his chance again to start, and it's gonna like I'm not sure it's gonna go well because it's gonna be under this like weird. The season's already weird. He's had a bunch of days off now. Like I just don't think. And then everybody's gonna be like, "See, I was right," and I'm gonna be like, "Meh." He wasn't prepared.
He couldn't practice.
Like it's just
the other problem, like the rash of injuries, especially to pitchers. It's
what everyone said would happen, and yeah. Surprise.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. Like we make fun of the Mets. Like obviously they didn't have depth going into it. That was obvious. But it's not just them. Like you've seen. I think at one point there was like 50 pitchers on the injured list. And it's just a weird season. And I don't know, like, the Mets should have planned a little better, but this is just compounding that problem.
I mean, heading into the Subway Series, the Yankees had to place Gleyber Torres and James Paxton on the injured list at the same time, which adds to their already burgeoning injury problem. So, like, it's not just the Mets. It's certainly not just the Mets. Like, a whole bunch of teams are dealing with injuries, and it's what everyone thought would happen because it's not just, like, I think people misunderstand pitching injuries a lot, and they think that, like, oh, if he pitches too much, he'll get hurt. It's also when pitchers don't pitch enough, they get hurt, too. Like,
and they people were talking about
the time off from the coronavirus, and, like, people were saying, oh, he had all this rest, like, he should be fine. No. When guys sit for a long time, and then they have to, like, ramp it up to, like, 100 again, that's really hard for them to do. And that was the huge challenge coming into this season was, like, yeah, obviously guys had a really long, extra long off season, but, like, you can't expect them to just ramp it up right away. And that's going to cause a lot of injuries.
But I don't know, it's not just pitchers, too. It's Stanton, it's Judge, and Judge was on a tear, too, which was, so that was kind of a shame for the Yankees. And I think LeMahieu was hurt, too. So yes, it's kind of, like, it's kind of sad, because how can you judge the season when you have teams that are going to be playing, like, 25 doubleheaders in September? You have teams missing players who are just missing for undisclosed location, for undisclosed reasons. You have injuries because of the weird season. Like, I don't know how historically you can view this season as, I don't want to say it's not legitimate, but there's just so many factors that it's hard to compete when you have to deal with all these things.
I feel like a lot of this season, as far as, like, the record books or the stats are just going to kind of get thrown out. Like, or, like, not thrown out, but, like, considered less in the grand scheme of things. And, I mean, people have talked about this already, but it'll be interesting to see how it affects, you know, like, free agent salaries and things like that. Because, like, how much are they going to consider this season for a guy who may have gotten a big payday in the free agent market, but this season he was hurt, or this season he didn't perform up to his usual career norms. Like, how can you possibly ding him for that? Who knows? And like, on the other side of things, like, how does this affect somebody who performs a la Lance Lynn? Like, he's suddenly good again out of nowhere. He's great, and, like, that's awesome for him, and I hope he continues to pitch well. Good for him. But, like, it's definitely out of line with his career norms in the other direction. So, like, who knows exactly what will happen. It's wild. It's a weird season. Everything is weird. They probably shouldn't be playing it. Yet here we are.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
But yeah, we will move on now to sort of wider baseball issues. Very much in line with the sort of things that we talk about on this podcast, there was an incident last week. Was it last week now? How many days ago was it now? Yeah, I think it was last week. Where Tom Brenneman, the Reds broadcaster, used a homophobic slur on a hot mic during the broadcast. I'm not going to repeat it, obviously, but if you want to look it up for some reason, you can probably find it. He said it when he didn't know the mic was on, but obviously, if you say things when you are surrounded by other people, even if you don't know the mic is on, it's still a reflection of something you would normally say. He then issued a very strange, like, on-air apology, during which he said he was, quote, a man of faith, and took a moment to call a home run during said apology while he was apologizing, which was very odd, and then went on to say that this is not who he is, which is obviously nonsense. So yeah, that was really upsetting, obviously, for folks, both in the LGBTQ community and folks who care about the LGBTQ community and want them to feel included in baseball. So, yeah, we wanted to bring Jen on to talk about this because obviously it's not necessarily an isolated incident. It's not surprising necessarily, but that doesn't make it any less saddening.
Yeah, I have so many feelings about this, especially as a queer, non-binary baseball writer. It's just, I mean, first of all, when he was like, I'm a man of faith, it's like, queer people can be people of faith as well. Like, that's not an isolated thing to be a man of faith and be homophobic when queer people are very much also people of faith. I mean, I grew up around two openly gay Catholic priests, so I'd like to see him use that word around him. But for me, I keep seeing it as, like, it's not necessarily about just Tom Brenneman, it's about the environment in which he's in that he feels comfortable saying a slur around people. And that's more indicative of, like, what does that say about the environment in the broadcast booth? What does that say about the environment at the ballpark? What does that say about the environment with the Reds, with MLB? It's just a lot of things that are going into it that is not just Tom Brenneman that people should be looking at, but should be looking at baseball's environment as a whole.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like, people keep talking about how there hasn't been, you know, an out gay player in baseball, and obviously that would be a really important milestone to have that, and obviously statistically speaking there have been players who are not straight playing, but they don't feel comfortable being out, and that would be a huge milestone. But I think that, like, people get too focused on that one thing, and we need to talk about not just what the clubhouses look like. We need to talk about what the broadcast booths look like, what the people covering baseball look like, what the people in front offices look like. It's not just about what players look like. It's about creating an environment in all of these places surrounding the game that is welcoming to folks of all sexualities, all races. And so, like, these comments are, like you said, Jen, it's like, the fact that he can so casually just drop that, it means that he's done it before, and it means that he's in a place where he feels comfortable to do that, and that's a huge, huge problem, and the monopolizing, you know, the idea of being a man of faith, like, not only can queer people be people of faith, nor do people who claim to be people of faith have a monopoly on morality or what is good.
What bothered me too is when he was replaced finally in the booth, like three innings later, his partner goes, "Oh, you're a good man." What? Like, he just has to leave because he said a slur on air, and you're just reiterating that he's a good man? Like, that's the part that also bothered me, too, is did they not see what he did was wrong in the moment?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, clearly, it's about the environment that's created there. Like, clearly if his partner thinks he's a good guy, like, he's gonna feel, you know, like he has free reign to say what he wants. And so that's deeply unfortunate. I mean, he was removed from the broadcast for the second game of the doubleheader and fired from his role as an NFL broadcaster. So we'll see what happens. But in his apology, too, what struck me about it is the way he... Like, they always make it about them and not about the people they're hurting.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, "I don't know if this is the last time I'll ever put on the headset again." And it's like, that's not what's being lamented here. It's how you acted. Like, you should be held accountable. It's not about you. It's about the people that you've hurt. It's about centering them, not about centering you.
Yeah, and that was the thing. It's like, he's apologizing for getting caught. He was apologizing to his bosses and saying, "I don't know when I'll ever call a game again," without even addressing what it was that he did, why it was wrong, and apologizing to the people he hurt. And then the Red's apology, along with like his apology, was more like, "I'm sorry if you were offended." It's like, it's not about offending people. It's about hurting people. And that's where my issue is with that apology, is that it centered himself, centered him being caught, and it doesn't even address LGBTQ people at all.
Right. And, like, how many times do we have to see teams go through this to understand how to properly apologize for something? Like, I know it's completely unrelated, obviously, and far less important, but, like, you watched what happened with the Astros during their cheating scandal. You watched how bad they were at apologizing and not just saying straight up, "We're sorry to everyone that we hurt, and we're sorry that we fucked up." Like, it's oftentimes that simple. Obviously, you have to back up your words with action, but as far as actually issuing a good apology, it really is just about saying, "I'm sorry to everyone that I hurt. I screwed up. This was unacceptable." Like, they time and time again, we see these same "I'm sorry you're offended" stuff, and it's nobody ever learns. Nobody ever learns. It's mind-boggling.
And one of the other things that I was thinking about that was kind of brought up a little while ago is how, like, MLB hasn't really had any out ball players at the major league level, because then, like, that would change things a lot. But I don't know if either of you have heard of the story of Tyler Dunnington.
Was he the minor league ball player who committed suicide? Because I know there was one.
I don't think that was him, but Tyler Dunnington was with the St. Louis Cardinals, and he was a minor leaguer. He quit in 2015 after hearing his teammates talking about killing gay people, and he is a gay man, and he wrote to OutSports in 2016 to share his story, and he said that he was one of the unfortunate closeted gay athletes who experienced years of homophobia in the sport that he loved, and he explained a little bit more about, like, what had happened, and the article said, like, somehow the chatter one day brewed about gay people, and the coach made a bragging reference to the brutal murder of Matthew Shepard, and then said, "We kill gay people in Wyoming," and then the article said, like, the comment killed Dunnington's spirit, and I believe this was when he was still in college. And that alone just also kind of highlights the problem that's been going on in MLB, because there was an openly gay minor leaguer at one point, David Denson with the Milwaukee Brewers, and his career as a professional ball player didn't last that long, but still, you would think that someone who's openly out and, you know, talking about it would have an impact on the game, but it didn't. And David Denson came out, was it like maybe 2016, 2015, but, you know, in time since then, we've had the incident with Kevin Pillar also using a homophobic slur, and the fact that that happened after there was a out pro ball player in the minor leagues that were like affiliated ball, like that goes to show that there is more of a problem in MLB's culture than anything, that it's still ingrained there and there's really nothing that's changing it.
Right. Yeah. I remember that now that you mention it, I remember that OutSports article, and I will, I'll link it in the show post and the tweets for this week. Because it's important for everyone to read, I think, who hasn't read it. But yeah, it's just like, obviously as like a cis straight person, I can't even imagine walking into a clubhouse and just feeling so you can't even exist there. Like your very existence is threatened just by walking into the clubhouse. Just trying to do what you love and play the sport that you love. It's upsetting. It's super upsetting.
It's heartbreaking. And I think it was Cheryl Ring. She said that MLB's response to any time this comes up is to just have Billy Beane issue a statement, basically. And they need to do more than that. Like, that's well and good, but it needs to go beyond that now. Like, that's not enough. It needs to go beyond that now.
And I feel like all the, like, rainbow avatars and, like, pride nights, like, ring so hollow when you don't actually take further actions to make LGBTQ folks feel welcome in your franchise, and in MLB as a whole. Like, they do these performative things. Like,
yeah.
They do it because they think it's cool, and they think that it'll, like, you know, it's about the brand for them. Like, oh, we're gonna put rainbow stuff because it's about the brand. And, like, it pisses me off. Like, and I can't imagine how not straight people feel about this. Like, it to see them, like, put these rainbow avatars when they don't actually do, like, shit for LGBTQ people is disgusting. Like, you might as well not put it at all. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I just always look at it as, like, oh, good, more rainbow capitalism. That's exactly what us gay people have been asking for, not systemic change or anything. It's frustrating also because, like, I've experienced it a lot. Like, there are times where, like, when I'm covering baseball and I'm, you know, out at the field and talking to people, like, the only people who really know that I'm out are, like, the people who I've corresponded with in different front offices because they know my writing. They know I've been, you know, writing as a queer baseball writer. So, like, they're very aware from that. And, like, my pronouns are in my email signature and they're following that. But then, like, when I'm on the field, like, if I'm getting misgendered, I don't even want to point it out because I'm like, I don't know how they'll react. I don't know if I would be putting myself in any danger or anything. And I think, like, that to me is also telling that I can't, that I don't feel openly, like, I can be open that I'm, you know, not cis and not a woman and I'm on the field and getting players to respect that. I'm like, I don't know how they're going to react. I don't know how to even broach that topic with them. So I just don't say anything because, like, I fear more for my safety and, like, obviously being, you know, femme, I can pass as cis as much as I can, but, like, on the field, it's really hard because, like, there's this struggle for me where I'm just like, I want to be my authentic self, but I don't know how these players are going to react. I don't know what their views are on a lot of stuff. I don't know if they're going to be, you know, they're supporting me or whatever. So it's a really hard thing to navigate. And even when I worked in indie ball, like Lindsay Gibbs interviewed me for Think Progress because I might have been like one of the first openly non-binary executives in baseball anywhere, whether it be MLB affiliated or not. Even after that came out and how my pronouns are they, them, the entire staff kept misgendering me. And I just gave up on it because they were not listening. And they read the article, they shared it, and still did not respect me. So it's a terrible environment because, like, all these teams are like, oh, we got to do something for Pride Month. We got to do something, you know, to bring LGBTQ fans to the ballpark. But when people who work in baseball are treated terribly, like how I have, I'm sure I'm not an isolated incident. It just makes people think, like, well, why are we still in this? And, like, for me, a lot of that is why I stopped pursuing MLB jobs. Because I don't know if it would have been an open and welcome environment for, you know, a queer, non-binary Filipino person. So it's disappointing because there's so much work that can be done, but there's also so much more, like, people pushing back against it. And the problem there lies in that people aren't willing to change unless they are forced to. And I feel like with the current political climate and the uprisings, like, there are more people who feel comfortable actually saying something a little bit. But I'm also weary of MLB doing anything right, especially with how they're handling Black Lives Matter, with a lot of it being performative.
Yeah, for sure. I thought of that also. And, like, how, like, they're out here doing this, like, pre-anthem anthem so that they can kneel. And then, like, yet the N-word is still thrown around on, like, a regular basis. Among, like, you know, MLB fans, like, ask Adam Jones about what he experienced in Boston. He's talked about it. You know, it's just, it's really frustrating. And, like, I feel like as, like, folks who are not in these marginalized communities need to step up a lot more, because we can't expect folks in marginalized communities to constantly be doing the work to try to break these barriers down when it comes at the cost of their safety and their comfort. We need to make ourselves uncomfortable because we aren't risking anything the way that marginalized folks are. We aren't risking, you know, our safety by, you know, standing up for LGBTQ people in baseball, by standing up for folks of color in baseball. So if you are not a member of these marginalized communities, you need to do more. If you are involved with baseball, to, you know, pave the road, because you can't expect folks who are tired to be on the front lines all the time. It's just, it's exhausting. It's exhausting.
And that reminds me of, like, Matt Bowman's tweet the other day after Brenneman said the slur. So, like, obviously Amir Garrett came out in support of LGBTQ communities, saying, like, if, you know, you're against LGBTQ folks, you're also against me. Matt Bowman also had a really good tweet out there that said, LGBTQ plus community, as a member of the Reds organization, I am so sorry for the way you were marginalized tonight. There will always be a place for you here in the baseball community, and we are so happy to have you here. Like, that was a better apology than what Brenneman said, and Bowman didn't even do anything wrong.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Like, you're leaving it up to the players, and thank God there's some good ones, because, like, man, like, it's just...
I'm wondering, is that what it's going to take? Because we've seen a lot of players, you know, leading the Black Lives Matter movement. They're a lot more vocal on Twitter. So will it have to come within order for change? Because clearly MLB is incapable of instituting any sort of meaningful change.
I think it has to be. I think it, like, this is part of, like, my own personal philosophy, where it has to be, like, you know, change is hard to come from top down approach, so it can't just be like MLB having Billy Beane going out there and doing his spring training seminars about LGBTQ plus inclusivity. It's also got to come from the players. It's got to also come from bottom up and holding people at the top accountable. And I kind of saw that with Joey Votto's statement. There was a Cincinnati Inquirer article about, like, players' reactions to Tom Brenneman said it. And Votto's statement to me was really interesting because he said he was wary of speaking on things like that because he's not a perfect person. But he said it was still important that it is acknowledged that it is wrong. And I think that's, like, an important takeaway for everything, like, especially with, like, a white player like Votto. It's like he's aware that what he's going to say is not perfect, but knows he still needs to take a stand against it. And, like, to me, that shows, like, okay, he's learning. He's still, like, actively trying to do better, but also knows, like, he's got to call it out. And I just hope that other players see it and realize, okay, we got to do that with our platform too.
Yeah. And I mean, we've talked about this on the pod in the past in the context of domestic violence and how the players need to create an environment where this sort of behavior is unacceptable, and you're no longer accepted in the clubhouse if you participate in this sort of behavior. And I think that the same sort of principle applies here. Like, if you're the type of person that casually drops a homophobic slur in the dugout, like, unless you're called out by your teammates, I feel like you're not going to be inclined to change in any way. So it's going to be not just about what they say publicly on Twitter, but how they act in private, in the clubhouse when the doors are closed, when it's, you know, locker room talk, as they say. When that goes down, like, who's going to actually be the one that says, like, hey, that's not cool. And hopefully by what we've seen from Bowen and Amir Garrett and Votto and others, hopefully that will start to be called out in the clubhouse, and that might be an indicator that change is coming, and that, you know, players in the future might be more comfortable being who they are in the clubhouse, which will hopefully lead to more important change around the game, because, like I said earlier, it's not just players being a reflection of the fan base. It's, you know, creating this sort of environment in front offices, because Jen didn't feel welcome in a front office necessarily. So it's about front offices, it's about broadcast booths, it's about people who cover baseball, media rooms, it's about, you know, every aspect of the game being inclusive. So hopefully there will be positive change.
Yeah, that's heartbreaking to think about, because, like, think of all the talent we could be missing out on if people can't be themselves and don't want to get involved in the game. Like, the game could be so much better to have different voices and different perspectives, and we're missing that.
Exactly, and, like, that's why, like, I want to help hold everyone in MLB accountable, because, like, I feel like the ship has sailed for me. Like, I don't really have any interest in working for an MLB front office, at least in this time right now, but, like, I still want to see a change, because I know there's going to be more people who are like me and might feel, like, unwelcome in these spaces, but, like, they really want to work in MLB, and, like, I don't want to see anyone else have the same experiences as me, because they were pretty terrible experiences, and, like, I'd rather that it never happened, but, like, I also want it to never happen again, because, like, I see so many people who are just, like, graduating college right now and are like, I want to work in MLB, but I don't have a way in. And not only, like, do they not have a way in, like, they might feel uncomfortable when they get there and they want to leave. And that's not an uncommon thing, because I have heard of a lot of people from marginalized backgrounds who do get into front offices, and sometimes they just stay there because it is an MLB job, but they're miserable, and I don't want to see that keep happening.
Yeah. And it's like, it extends, the branches of this extend so much further than people think, because like MLB thrives so much on like unpaid internships and like things like that. And if you're not a person who is in a privileged position, you can't take a job like that is often a bridge to a front office job, you know? So it's not just about, it's about the more like the more like sinister, like underground ways of excluding people that isn't just like out and out, like what you think of as obvious exclusion. It's things like unpaid internships that are a huge problem in gaining access to the spaces that you need to get access to in order to rise up in the ranks of an MLB front office, that are huge problems. So like all these, yeah, like all these college kids that come up now are so much smarter than me. And I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, like baseball would benefit so much from like your intellect, and you spent like, you know, an hour in R like coding this. Come on. Like,
no, that's exactly it, because I remember when I was still in grad school, I went to Sabre Analytics, and the only reason I was able to go to Sabre Analytics was because I got one of the scholarships for that. But like the fact that I could not afford a $400 like fee to get into Sabre Analytics, and then like the whole lodging and travel and everything, like that already was, you know, a barrier to trying to get to Sabre. And then when I'm there, Angels GM Billy Epler said to me and a couple other college kids, they're like, oh, you're young, you know how to live cheaply. And I was like, that's not the point. The point is that, like, some of us need to be able to afford to live. And Anaheim is not the cheapest place to live.
Like, not at all.
If I'm lucky, I can rent a closet for $500. In Anaheim. So it's not about living cheaply, it's about affording to live.
And like, I don't know, like people who say stuff like that don't take into account the fact that like someone might have like underlying healthcare costs that they're paying for, because this country's healthcare system is totally fucked. And like some people might have, you know, like relatives that they are caring for in addition to themselves. Like, people just think that college kids are all about, like, eating ramen noodles and providing only for themselves. Like, a lot of them have to work jobs to provide for family members that are not them, and other issues that they have going on in their lives that are not their fault, and, you know, that they have to pay for. So it's, like, it's such an oversimplified view to be able to be like, oh, you're a college kid, you're used to roughing it, it's fine. Like, ugh. Some people can rough it, and some people can't, you know?
And that's the thing, because, like, I went to a historically women's college that is, like, 63% people of color. So I'm, like, I saw, like, a lot of my classmates having to work, like, 35 hours a week on top of taking classes full time. So I'm, like, it's not a matter of, like, being able to rough it. It's, like, they need to survive. And I know MLB does not pay for, like, relocation costs. Right. And that's also another thing. It's like, you want people to move from one city to like maybe New York or Seattle or San Francisco and not help them with moving costs that are probably worth thousands of dollars. Like, are you serious?
Yeah, exactly.
And that automatically starts to exclude people who are LGBTQ, because, you know, a lot of them are coming from like different circumstances, and like, who knows, like, you know, they might not have family support because their family isn't okay with them being LGBTQ, or some of them might be going through like transition costs, and it, like, a lot of insurances don't cover transition costs, and if you're lucky, you know, maybe Medicare will be able to cover it, but like, still, that's a lot of money. And then for BIPOC, like, it's already a systemic issue that, you know, people of color get paid less than white people. So it's like, if they have a different offer that doesn't include relocation costs, like, I don't blame them for not taking the MLB job, because MLB, it's kind of like you have to pay to play. It reminds me of the Pecos League, which is an independent baseball league where you have to pay to be able to play in a game there. Ugh. And that to me is already ridiculous. So like MLB sometimes feels like a pay to play situation to be able to work there.
Yeah, it definitely feels that way.
And this is still MLB. Like, they made $10 billion last year. Like, come on. It's just statements like that. They're just so flippant and so, like, even take just a regular college kid who's, you know, has, like, no other responsibilities. But how is it okay that they can't afford to live? Like, and they're probably saddled in debt and with student loans and everything else. But it's still not okay that they have to eat ramen noodles for dinner. It's just grating that's supposed to be normal in this country.
Well, America glorifies, like, you know, hustling till you die, which is,
like, yeah,
the
yeah.
most ridiculous, awful mindset imaginable. Capitalism.
And I feel like that's why, like, if the environment has always been like that already, like, of course LGBTQ people are not going to feel comfortable in a front office. So it's like, that's why, like, I've seen an article in the LA Times from LZ Granderson where it says, like, it's not about Tom Brenneman. If he changes, great. If he doesn't, I'm not surprised. But the whole thing that MLB needs to do is to investigate why the culture is the way that it is. And I'll send you both the article from the LA Times to link to it. But, like, it was a good piece because it says, like, it's a bigger problem than just Tom Brenneman saying it. It is a league-wide issue.
Right. Like, he's just an example of a larger problem.
Well, you also had everybody bending over backwards to excuse Hader, and, like, oh, he was a kid, it's, you know, he's learned. So there's no, and I think the same thing with, like, Trey Turner, and it was, oh, you know, those didn't mean anything. So, like, the excuses just kept coming. So they were already kind of, I don't want to say normalizing it, but there was no consequences. So what would stop somebody else from saying it? And clearly that kept happening.
Right. Like, Hader was just a kid when he tweeted those uh-huh. slurs. It's like, well, Tom Brenneman's a grown-ass man.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the other thing. It's like, Hader was like 17, 18 when he tweeted that and was like, sure, he might be a kid, but, like, also when I was a kid, I knew not to say slurs. So yeah. That's also yeah. a telling of his upbringing there. Like,
yeah.
I remember when I was like maybe 8 or 9 and I said, like, a ableist slur, and my dad was like, no, do not say that again. I'm going to punish you. Because, you know, like, you have family who's autistic, you cannot say that. And, like, immediately after that, I knew at 7 years old, like, I could not say that word, and I never said it again. And, like, the fact that he was a kid doesn't excuse him. It's like, kids should know better when they're 17 if, you know, kids were able to understand when they're 7 that they can't say it. So, even more so with Brenneman, he's like, he didn't know that it was homophobic, or, like, it's like, no, you have no excuse at this point, especially when MLB is, you know, putting out all that rainbow capitalism. It's like, you're in your 50s at this point. You've got no excuse, dude.
Well, did you read his apology that he wrote the next day?
I did. And that's where he's like, I didn't know it was being homophobic. And I was like,
come on.
Are you serious? Like, I mean, sure, maybe he doesn't know what being homophobic encompasses, because there's a lot, but it's also, like, it's a slur. it's known as a slur. Kobe Bryant was fined for using it as a slur in 2011, which that LA Times article also brought up. So it's like, it's been in the sports world that it's a slur. How, like, I'd like to know the rock that he's living under, because it seems nice.
And, like, I mean, I'm obviously not gonna repeat what he said, but if you listened to what he said, you know that he knows it's a slur. Yes. That's all I'm gonna say about that. It's like, he weaponized the word. He weaponized the word. If you know enough about the word to weaponize the word, you know it's a slur.
And he knew enough not to say it on air. He just didn't know he was on air at the time. So if it's not something you would say, like, where the public can hear you, then you probably shouldn't be saying it.
Yeah. And, like, also, like, using it in, like, a obviously derogatory manner, but also implying that it's, like, a bad thing that, like, it's a gay capital. I'm like, oh, is there supposed to be something wrong with a lot of gay people? Like, it doesn't make sense. It's like, they're people, they're not doing anything to you, like, they're existing. Is that a problem? Like, really?
Yeah, it was very confusing. Like, what he said and the way he said it, it was just like, it was infuriating, and also like, what are you even talking about? Like, what? Oh, baseball. I think, like, what's the most disheartening thing about all of this is just, like, I think it goes back to, like, how many people who are in these marginalized communities who wish they could be, like, who wish they could work in baseball or, like, want to work in baseball. It's, I think, like, nothing hurts more than the thing you love being reminded that the thing you love so much does not love you back. And that's what I feel every time I see a new, like, domestic violence case and the fallout that comes from that and how nothing changes. Like, it reminds me that as a woman, baseball doesn't love me back. And when you add LGBTQ identity on top of that, that's even more fold. Like, it's so saddening every time you, like, this thing that you pour your soul into, that you love so deeply, doesn't give a shit about. It's sad. It hurts.
That's where, like, all, like, intersectionality comes to play, because, like, everyone's of all different identities, and, like, there's these intersections, and it's so clear that if you are not a white, straight, cis man, MLB does not love you.
Yep.
And, like, I think it's important to mention here that I think that this connects interestingly with the stats that came out recently about viewership in 2020 and how it's actually up in MLB compared to last year, which, you know, I think is partially, like, COVID driven, because, like, MLB is kind of the only game in town, or at least it was for a little while. It's not anymore. But, like, you know, people are, you know, working from home or not working, in the unfortunate case of some folks having lost their jobs. But, you know, they're home and they're watching because they can't go out. And so I think that drives part of it. But interestingly enough, the other part is that it's up primarily among women and young people. That's what's driving the uptick in viewership. And I think that, and people treated it like this, whoa, like, women? And it's like, yeah. Like,
yeah, shocking. Like,
it's been around for a while. It's not just men. Like, can we get the Viagra ads out of here now, too? Like, really?
Oh my god, the amount of Roman ads I've seen on MLB TV this year already is just staggering.
It's a lot on ESPN.
Like, people who are not straight white cis men like baseball and watch it and write about it and cover it and want to talk about it. And, like, you should create an environment that makes them feel like they are wanted. And right now you're really not.
No, which, if I can plug something here... myself and Stephanie Springer, who is a baseball writer, she's been at the Hardball Times and numerous other places. She and I are helping organize something that this community that we're creating has called itself the Anti-Old Boys Network. It is specifically a place where non-cis men, so like women, trans folks, non-binary folks, gender non-conforming folks, and anyone who's not white can come in, and it's a place to network with people who work for teams, if you're looking for a job, also like trying to find ways to change the culture within MLB. So like if you're interested, if anyone's interested in like, you know, working in baseball and also wanting to change the culture, like send me a DM. We'll add you in.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
And definitely share like the details with us as they come, because we will obviously use our channels to promote that however we can. So
yeah,
That's awesome. Stephanie's great. Stephanie and I are kindred spirits as scientists that write about baseball. So, and we both wrote COVID things for Baseball Prospectus about COVID and baseball. And she's such a great writer and, you know, person to have on a project like this alongside you. You guys are going to do a great job with that. That's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. And one of the things that we've been, you know, part of what sparked this is like trying to do like monthly Zoom calls or like Zoom forums, and trying to like I didn't want to like completely shape how those Zoom calls look like, and neither did Stephanie. So we're doing it like very community based and doing monthly webinars maybe, and like really helping change the culture this way. So that's also something that we're going to have out. So like we're planning our September Zoom forum soon. So it's a small thing, but like we're really, really adamant about changing the culture, because like, as we've all said here, like it's depressing for anyone who's not a white, straight, cis guy, but it needs to change, and the change isn't going to come from the top.
Right. Exactly. And I'm already imagining how great it's going to be to like call, it's like open a Zoom call and just see a bunch of faces that, you know, you feel like you're reflected in. And you're like, finally, I have found my people. It's like such a good feeling when that happens. So I hope that you can make that happen for people.
And like for our first Zoom call, we already had like 30 plus people on there. So like,
oh, wow.
it's still That's growing. Awesome. So like the fact that we have 30 plus people who are like either college students or already people who are working for teams, like, you know, joining in. So it's like a mix of everyone, and like really working on getting more people through the door and changing the culture so people stay. So it's a good thing, and I'm hoping that it continues.
That's well, fantastic. Yeah, anything we can do, let us know, because that sounds fantastic. So definitely keep us updated.
I will definitely.
For sure. With that, we like to close the show on a happy note each week, so we will do what we do every week and end the show with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. Jen Ramos, what is your walk-off win?
I would have to say is my my weekly Zoom calls with California League colleagues, where it's just once a week we're all on a Zoom call. I'm like one of the few folks on there who's not a broadcaster in the California League. I'm a beat writer there basically, but like they invited me on, and we're just all like kind of hanging out and trying to get through what would have been the minor league season, and just talking as how we normally do when we're at games. So every week I have that.
That's awesome. My friends and I have a Zoom book club every week now since quarantine started, and it's just been nice. Like every week I just get to see like some familiar faces that bring me comfort no matter how good of a or bad of a week I'm having, you know.
Yeah, and it's for me, like it brings me joy, because it's like all these, you know, baseball people, and we're just hanging out and talking about whatever. Like, doesn't have to be baseball, but like we're all baseball people, so it's nice.
I mean, there's no substitute for getting together, but it's something that I feel helped me too, is like you said, still see familiar faces and still kind of get together, and you know, it helps keeping you connected to people you care about and people you know who are probably, you know, feeling some of the things you're feeling without, you know, the minor league season. So it's always a good, it's another good outlet to have, I think.
Totally.
Linda Cervich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win, I feel like I haven't had a baseball one in a while, so I decided to go baseball, and I'm picking Dom Smith, because...
Dom Smith rules.
Dom Smith has been just such a joy to watch. Like, I remember I was super sick at the end of February, and... You know, I didn't realize it at the time that I should have been savoring all the spring training games I could watch while I was homesick from work. And it was when they were mic'd up. And it was, I can't tell you how much joy that brought me, is seeing them mic'd up. And they were hilarious during the game. And Dom Smith was the highlight. And it was great to see, like, because then the video went viral, and it was great to see, like, kind of everybody else get introduced to the Dom we know, and everybody else, like, love Dom like we do, so, but now he's just killing it. Like, I'm so glad they didn't trade him, and I think there's a, like, I was on the trade Dom Smith bandwagon. I'm embarrassed a bit to now because I didn't think there was a place for him on the team, but I think you absolutely have to make a place for him now, and he's just fun to watch. He's easy to root for, and just one of the season's been awful for so many reasons, but he's been one of the bright spots, so thank you, Dom Smith, for bringing some joy to the 2020 season.
Yeah. Love Dom. I mean, I think that, like, embarrassingly too, like, I kind of was of the same mind as you, Linda. I was like, they kind of have to trade him because, like, Pete Alonso ain't going anywhere, and, like, what are they gonna do with Dom? And, like, it was more like, and I still feel tinges of this occasionally, but it was more like, I want him to spread his wings so he can fly somewhere else, because, like, he deserves to be a team's everyday first baseman. Yeah. And so, like, I kind of was, like, trade him for his sake, not, like, for the Mets' sake. Like, you know, he'd be better off because if he got traded to another team, he'd be the everyday first baseman. But, you know, I was, like, you know, I hate to say it, but the DH, like, being in the National League has made a huge difference in this regard. And we have always been an anti-DH podcast.
We are
National League assholes. We love the DH. We hate the DH. We love pitchers who rake on this podcast, Jake rakes. But you know, I hate to say it, it's been all because of the DH that Dom has gotten to flourish this year, because it allows him to get at bats. And so, for that small reason, I am thankful for the NLDH this year. I don't know.
It seems
like it's going to be a thing moving forward, almost definitely. So just going to have to get used to it anyway.
Yeah, if it needs more Dom, I'll make my peace with it.
Exactly. Initially, I was always, like, more Cespedes than yes, but now I'm more Dom than yes.
I'm of the mindset now, I'm just, like, waiting for a manager in the NL to make, like, put someone in, like, basically getting the DH taken out. Like, who's going to be the manager who makes a boneheaded enough move?
I can guarantee you it's the Mets.
And get the DH removed. And, like, I think Joe Maddon did that yesterday, actually.
He did.
And I was like, this is a chef kiss right here. And I think they ended up having, like, Anthony Benboom pitching. And then because they put in, like, someone, like, a position player to pitch, they lost the DH or something. It was a mess, and it was beautiful.
I'm not surprised it's so bad. I'm actually surprised at how bad the Angels are. I didn't realize it until today. I think they're the worst team in the league.
How'd that happen?
I don't know, because I thought Trout was doing so well, but that's just my knowledge of the Angels is Mike Trout.
And they have Anthony Rendon. Do they not have Anthony? Is Anthony Rendon
hurt?
Is he
hurt?
Anthony Rendon is still there. Like, well, the last series that I watched him in, like, I think it was against the A's, he was playing there, but... Joe Maddon did leave Shohei Ohtani in to pitch a little too long and might have re-injured Ohtani. So Okay. He's back to just DHing purely. So I'm just like, you don't leave in a guy that long when he's just recovering from pitching injuries. So that was pretty bad.
Unfortunate, because the Angels are fun. So
that's, yeah.
They are officially now the worst team in baseball with a 9-22 record and a
woof.
And a .290 winning percentage.
Oh.
The Pittsburgh Pirates are next to that with a 7-17 record and a 2.92 winning percentage.
Oh, yikes.
Meanwhile, the Orioles are good.
Birdland.
I want to say I called it because in my preseason picks for Baseball Prospectus, I said it would be an Orioles-Dodgers World Series.
Yes, ooh. Let's do it. I'm ready.
I called Reds-Rangers, so I can't.
That's not looking so good.
No, it's not. But I don't want to backtrack. I'm on the Lance Lynn bandwagon.
There you go. The Rangers are not playing well as a whole.
Oh, God.
They ran hard into karma. Slam Diego, so.
Yeah, that was 100% karma for them.
Oh, yeah. I like to think so. So my walk-off win for this week is that I finally started my new job, which is exciting.
Yay!
So I am now officially a policy analyst at the National Human Genome Research Institute, which is awesome. I'm very excited. I had been trying to start this job for a while now. Like, I got hired what feels like ages ago. I guess it was June. But the federal government doesn't always work at the fastest pace in the world. And plus they're adjusting to, COVID-19 and telework and stuff. So just like getting all my like clearances and access to like, to telework and to the VPN and everything turned out to be a more complex process than we had anticipated. So that delayed my start date. And I'm also a contractor too, which like adds a whole extra layer of like bureaucracy to it because I'm dealing with like I'm not dealing with the government directly. I'm like the government and I are both dealing with this third party contracting agency. So that's special, but I am officially started now. So that's exciting. And the stuff that I work on is like, it's really cool to get to like live the life that I imagined when I was younger. Like, this is like my dream job. It's like exactly what I wanted when I started grad school. And I started thinking like, I don't think I want to do like actual science when I graduate. I think I'd like to do like policy work and like, really help like integrate genomic science into like modern medicine and like beg Congress for money to make that happen and like get people to care about genetics and science, and like this is like exactly that type of job. So it's really cool and I'm really excited, and we'll see what happens, but I'm excited.
That's
so
that awesome. Congrats. Yeah, thank best you. Of luck in your new job.
Thank you. It's really cool to like update my email signature with like my new title and like all that stuff. Like it's always like really fun to be like, ooh, I feel so cool now. So yeah, that's exciting. And Michael's starting his new job, and so it's like a big era of transition. So everybody's and my friends are all like moving and starting jobs and getting married. I guess this is what your late 20s is like. So it's exciting. But yeah, that's my walk-off win for this week. But in the meantime, you can go to AmazingAvenue.com, check out all of our Mets content. We're covering all of the news updates of who's pitching what game at what time. And, we have game recaps, even the doubleheaders for you guys. Every single game, we have recaps for you over at AmazingAvenue.com. You should check out Jen and everyone else's work at Baseball Prospectus. They run a fantastic site there. You should absolutely be reading it for all of your for all of your statistics needs, for all of your prospect needs, and for all of your baseball analysis needs in general. Check out Baseball Prospectus, and you can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at PetitePhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servage.
And where can listeners find you on the internet, Jen Ramos?
Jen Mac Ramos.
Awesome. So follow each of us on Twitter, follow the show on Twitter. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Apple and iTunes are the same thing. Whatever. Wherever you get your podcasts from, your favorite podcast app of choice, subscribe to the show, rate and review. It really helps people find the show. The intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets, and don't forget, there is no crying in podcasts.